We are continuing. I'm going to make sure. Am I on? Is this on? Because last week I didn't think that I had it on. I don't think I had it on. Are we good? Okay, good. Make the same mistake twice. That's never good. We are in a series called Open, and what this conversation, this teaching series is about our lives being more open to what God has for us. The open life is one that is open to change. It is open to life revolution. But it begins from its very infancy, it begins with an invitation, right? You and I are not forced in this life to follow God. It's an invitation. And we're familiar with invitations. You and I get invitations in the mail all the time. Invitations to open houses, invitations to weddings, invitation to change your credit card, to refinance your house, to purchase a new car. These are all invitations, right? And invitations have with them, well, some basic pieces. There are three basic pieces to every invitation. Again, we're not breaking new ground here, but it's good to be aware of and remind ourselves of what it is that we are engaging. So invitations have always three pieces to them. They are always articulated. That is, that they are spoken or written. So there's always the articulation of it being spoken or written. It is structured. It has a who, what, when, where, and how. Those are the details of the invitation, right? And it is always results-oriented. There's always this opportunity for you to say, yes, I will do that. Yes, I will take on that credit card. Or no, I pass, and I'm not going. I'm not a part of that. It's kind of funny, you know, when you, I was thinking about invitations and was reminded this morning, there was a wedding that several of people that we had known for a long time had been invited to, but there were some in that group of people that knew this couple that was getting married who didn't receive invitations for one reason or another. I don't know all the details. I quite honestly, I don't even care. But some people had not been invited. And there were a couple of ladies, very funny ladies, who said, forget it, we're crashing, we're going. So, I mean, that's kind of funny, but in the larger grand scheme of things, that is ordinarily not accepted, right? If you don't get an invitation, you don't go, correct? That's just how invitations, that's the nature of invitations. When we consider the gospel and disciple-making and engaging in conversation with those who don't know Jesus, we often leave this invitation thing behind. And we say, well, it's not really about the invitation, it is about how you live. And we just kind of push away from the table, because whenever we start talking about the gospel and disciple-making, there is a church word that gets shoved into the middle of that, and that is the idea of evangelism. Now, evangelism is a very specific gift. That is someone who has the ability to speak into someone's life at a moment of great need, say the right, that's a specific gift set. That's not what we're talking about this morning. So in a temptation to want to push away from the table this morning, I'm going to ask you just to not do that. Because all we're talking about this morning is using your voice in the context that you currently live and work, your family, all of those details, and allowing God the space in your heart and in your mind to use those places, to use those opportunities, to speak into the life of other people. Whenever we start talking about evangelism, and speaking up for the gospel of Jesus, there is a phrase that we are fond of using. And I'm sure that you've probably heard this phrase before. And it allows us to kind of step away from using our voice. And it is this phrase. I think there's a slide for this. This famous phrase, it says this: preach the gospel, if necessary, use words. Who's heard that before?
Sure. your role, my role in evangelism. You don't have to have read A Generous Orthodoxy by Ryan McLaren, who talks about the generosity that God opens up to us through the way that he desires to have relationship with us. What do you got? Oh, my battery is dead. I just need one. This is training in action because we talk.
I know you can hear me. I can shout pretty good. You don't have to have access to all this stuff. You don't even have to have read all these things. You simply need to be willing, and I simply need to be willing to dive deep into this book. That's it. Now, these are good resources. Don't get me wrong. If you have these things at home and you've invested some money in them, I would encourage you, if you haven't read them, to read them. Spend some time going deep into the Word of God. It is not a disappointing venture to have spent time going deeply and understanding the context into which the Bible is written and what else is going on that caused the writer to write the things that he did. I think that's a valuable pursuit. The most important thing, though, in using our voice is not how much knowledge we have. It's about where our hearts are. I say this all the time. I don't know if you get tired of hearing me say this, but I'm going to keep saying it. It is not about what you know. It is not about how often you come to church. It is not about your bank account, whether you have or do not have. It is about your heart. Does God have your heart? He can have your attendance and your tithe and even your generosity. If he doesn't have your heart, all of those things will begin to fade away. I have, over the last probably 3 years or so, I have developed a bit of an obsession about barbecue, slow roasted barbecue. And smoked is really the best way to do it. I have a smoker at my house, but I have figured out how to, did a little research and figured out how to slow roast a pork butt or a pork shoulder to where it, you know, it roasts for like 6 or 7 hours and it just pulls apart. If you put your fingers in there, it will just pull apart very easily. Some of the best tasting meat I've ever had is slow roasted, where it takes like all day to cook and kind of bake down. I was doing a little bit of research on some of the best barbecue places in Michigan. And a couple of years ago, they did a top 10 list. So I'm gonna give you the top 10 places in Michigan. This is a couple of years old. One place, there are actually two on this list from the town of Muskegon. I was blown away by that. One of them in Muskegon is Habs Good Eat and Treats. West Texas Barbecue is in Jackson. There are two locations for Slow's Barbecue in Detroit and Grand Rapids. Union Woodshop in Clawson. Homeboy Barbecue in Flushing. Hogzilla in Battle Creek. I want to go there just because of the name. That sounds terrific. The Rusty Saw in Bay City. Rib Shack in Saginaw. You know, a couple of these are not that far away, folks. US 31 Barbecue in Muskegon, there's the second one, and Dallas Deli in Wyoming. Now, a couple of them that were not on the list, one, and these are places that I've been, there's a place in Lansing called Meat, and all they serve is meat. They have a little section for the vegetarians, and the only thing that is listed in the vegetarian section are the drinks that they offer. There's no meat, there's no vegetables, there's no green stuff, no salad, no vegetables, nothing. It's just meat. Another place that I have been to is Johnny V's Smokehouse down in Corunna. It's a little bit of a drive to get there from here because there's no easy way to get to Corunna, but it is really good. Now, Johnny V's is one of those places that, and this is one of the ways that I mark a good barbecue place is when you get out of the car, can you smell the smoker in the back? Johnny V's is at the top of the list for me because you can smell the smoker before you get out of your car. As you're driving in, you're like, what is that smell? And you get out and you're like, oh my gosh, that's what I'm about to eat. Now there's a new place that I just went to this past week. It's called Saddleback Barbecue, and it's down in just north of the Capitol area in Lansing. It's got a little place called Rio Town. And this place is really terrific. Again, it's one of those that you pull up and you're like, oh, it's something delicious is in the air. This place in particular is pretty great because they have on Friday what they call burnt ends. Now, if you're not familiar with what smoking looks like and all of that kind of stuff, a meat that has been smoked and slow roasted over the course of time, on the ends, kind of the edges, there are these places that get kind of burned and full of flavor. Some people do not like this. I don't understand those people. Because the burnt ends are spectacular. So I called on Friday morning, right after they opened. I think they opened at like 11. I called it like 11:01. And I asked them, I said, I would like an order of the burnt ends. Should I order them ahead of time or can I just come down? Will you guys run out of them? She said, oh no, they'll go quick. I said, okay, let me have an order of the burnt ends. And as she's starting to ring me up over the phone, I said, you know what? Change that. I want two orders of burnt ends because here's the problem. I knew that if I started eating them, I wouldn't have anything this morning to show you. I actually have one of the orders of the burnt ends from last week. Now, I don't know how fair this is to even show you what this looks like, but here is, let me get one that's really burned. See, this still smells good 2 days later. Little tiny succulent pieces. Tell you what, I will leave this out, and after church, if you want to come and grab a bite of a burnt end, you're welcome to. You might have to get up early because I don't know how much there is here. This place, Saddleback Barbecue, is terrific, and any good barbecue restaurant makes their own sauce. This is their red sauce. Now, it's kind of funny. I was telling my wife, I tend to like a sauce that's a little thicker, but this is kind of thin, but it is so good. They have a red sauce. They have a yellow sauce that is kind of a mustard base, and they have a vinegar sauce, which was also good. I was very surprised at that. That's kind of a different take on sauce than I had seen before. And they also have, when you order the burnt ends, and this comes with almost all of their meals, they have this little scoop of corn cake. It's real loose like cornbread. It is a perfect complement to barbecue. So what I have learned is that there are a lot of different variations of things, everything from sauces, like I mentioned, a thick sauce, smoky, sweet, spicy. Some are vinegar-based. Some have a kind of a salty, sweet thing going on, mustard-based. There are different rubs that you can put on your meat. A Memphis dry rub, a Carolina mustard rub. A Kansas City style sweet and tangy or a St. Louis rub. Now, here's something else that I have learned. There are a lot of imitators and wannabes in the barbecue world. In particular, restaurants that don't ordinarily carry a barbecue thing will try and dip their toe into the barbecue sauce. For example, Burger King right now has Al and I were talking about this the other day. Al, what is that sandwich called? The Rodeo King. Now, I had one. After Al's recommendation, I'm like, oh, I'm going to try one of those. So I had one of those last week, and it's a very good burger. You know, bacon and cheese, and I think there's onion rings on there, and barbecue sauce. Now, full disclosure, if you put bacon and cheese on something, on you could put it on bark, and I would probably give it a shot. But that sandwich is pretty good. But when you are aware of and you know what is best, because in my book, this is better than anything that I've had probably in the last month on the barbecue. And I try and eat barbecue on a regular basis because I love it. When you know about what is best and the best thing that is offered, why would you settle for something less than? See, this is really about, not about barbecue, but about our relationship with Jesus. If you follow Jesus and you've given your life over to him, this is the best thing that is offered. And yet, to use C.S. Lewis's quote, we are far too willing to settle for mud pies in the slum instead of a vacation at the sea. You and I have to be willing to get in touch with what it means to follow Jesus and the stories of what he has brought us out of, what he has saved you from. Because some of you have amazing stories that you had a life that was far from God and he rescued you and brought you to this day. And that story is compelling and meaningful. And some of you have stories that you can look back over your life and say, well, I've been following Jesus and I've been tied to him and he has saved me from all kinds of stuff. You and I need to get in touch with that part of our story and understand what it is that God brings to us, what he offers. Now, the best barbecue places offer, if I can find it, here it is. They offer wet naps, right? Because if you're eating barbecue right, you probably need one of these. Also, they offer you all the napkins you can use, right? One of the things we've talked about in our one-to-one gatherings is the importance of leveraging conversation times with other people that don't know Jesus at all. And one of the things we pointed to is you should be able to go and have dinner or lunch with someone that doesn't know Jesus. And you've ever heard the expression that million-dollar ideas start out on the back of a napkin at a restaurant? I want to give you a tool, something that I have come across recently, and I think this will be very helpful for us. In fact, go ahead and, well, don't put that up there yet. Hey, I need some help passing these out. Could you get, oh, and I'm making you move all your notes and stuff, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
Lorna, would you pass those out, give one to everybody? I'm going to give you something, and you don't have to write your, you don't have to write this on the napkin. If you need to, if you don't have the right kind of writing utensil that'll put it on the napkin, that's fine. You know, there's some space in your bulletin to do this. Go ahead to that next slide that has the picture of the circles on it. Like I said, this is a tool that I kind of ran across over the past couple weeks. And here, I want you to draw this on the napkin, and I want you to keep this somewhere, because this is a very simple and tangible way to explain what it is that God has done in your life. This is not about the person you're talking to. This is about your story. So the idea here is, in the top left circle, God's design. God designed the world for perfection. God designed the world in perfection. This was his purpose. This is how he put the world together. And he implants in us this desire for his image, to pursue him. And if you draw the arrow to the next circle there, and right above the arrow, sin. This is us messing up God's intention for the world. That we have somehow decided that the total freedom of the garden was not something we wanted. We wanted to do it our own way. And we decided to turn from God's glory. That next circle at kind of the 2 o'clock position is brokenness. This is what Scripture would call a spiritual death. Romans chapter 3 says, "For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God." And in this brokenness, we try to figure out how to get out of it on our own. Those are the squiggly lines that kind of are running outside of that circle. We try to figure out our own way out of that circumstance, out of that brokenness. So then the arrow that runs around towards the gospel, that is repent and believe. Ephesians chapter 2 says, "We were dead in our transgressions, but God." God showed up and rescued us and did something significant in our lives. But we have to be willing to understand that, to admit that we were dead in our transgressions. There wasn't anything that we could fix on our own. And then the next circle there goes to the gospel. This is what it means when Paul says, "By grace, the grace of the gospel of Jesus, you are saved." Not anything that you do on your own, not anything that you accomplish by yourself. And this is an important piece, because religion tells us that our whole relationship with God is us trying to get closer to God, that us trying to satisfy God. And the gospel of Jesus says, God already did that. He came close to you. He came close to me. And that is significant, because there is an admission, as we understand the gospel, that this is not about what I can do for God. It's about something that God already did for me. And then that last arrow is recover and pursue, as we chase God with all of our lives. So like I said, this isn't about the story of someone else. This is about your story. That you can look at this and you can begin to identify and understand the pieces of your story, because there is nothing more intimidating than trying to talk about the gospel of Jesus or what God has done for you and not knowing exactly how to do it. What to say? How am I going to respond? What if they ask questions that I don't have the answers for? There's nobody that is a better expert on your story than you. Nobody. You know the details of your story. You know what it is that God has brought you out of, what he has rescued you from. So this is not an invitation to have all the answers. This is not even an invitation to come to church. This is you and I inviting someone into a relationship with another person, a God who has changed our lives. That's what the invitation is. There are probably thousands of people in this county that don't know Jesus. They have no connection to a local church. They have no relationship with God whatsoever. And as we think about that, that can be overwhelming, right? Man, how in the world am I supposed to be a part of rescuing thousands of people who don't know Jesus? Well, the truth is that you're not. Whenever we talk about evangelism and reaching out and using our voice, sometimes we can paint the picture too big. See, God isn't asking you and I to be salt and light in the places that we are. Places that we work, that we grocery shop, our families. He's asking us to be salt and light in those places. He's asking you and I to make the most of what we have. The places that we are. I want to read for you again Matthew chapter 5. This is the text that kind of has anchored this entire conversation. Matthew 5, 13 to 16. This is out of the Message Bible. This is Jesus speaking to us. Let me tell you why you are here. You're here to be salt seasoning that brings out the God flavors of the earth. If you lose your saltiness, how will people taste godliness? You've lost your usefulness and will end up in the garbage. Here's another way to put it. You're here to be light, bringing out the God colors in the world. God is not a secret to be kept. We're going public with this, as public as a city on a hill. If I make you light bearers, you don't think I'm going to hide you under a bucket, do you? I'm putting you on a light stand now. I'm putting you on a light stand. Now that I've put you there on a hilltop, on a light stand, shine. Keep open house. Be generous with your lives by opening up to others. You'll prompt people to open up with God, this generous Father in heaven. There's a phrase that I became familiar with not long ago, maybe just a few weeks ago. And it says this. Go to that next slide there. What people think or even understand about Jesus comes from what they think or understand about you. How people understand God, their understanding of who God is he a benevolent God? Is he a gracious God? Is he vengeful? That begins, it is not totally informed, but it begins with what people understand about you. So if you're always the anxious person in the room, they might have ideas that God is anxious. If you are always kind of difficult to get along with, if you are the source and the center of trouble and conflict, they may begin to think that about God as well. But if you are one who is generous, who is enjoying the moment, who loves life, they may in fact begin to think that about God because of you. That's what it looks like to be salt and light. And this is the invitation that Jesus is offering us. You and I are offering an invitation to come closer to Jesus. We're offering that invitation to those that don't know him yet. Jesus is asking us to be salt and light. It is time that we begin to do that with our voices. Let's pray. Father, this morning we are consistently and continually grateful for the ways that you call us, the ways that you invite us to come closer. God, you have invited us into these moments right now. These moments that are life-altering. You've invited us to be open with our lives. To acknowledge that you are wanting more from our lives than we could possibly ask or imagine. And yet there are more times probably than we can count when we have settled for something less than what you are inviting. We look at your invitation and we begin to think, well, it's too hard, it's too difficult, that requires too much. I pray, God, that you would arrest those suspicions that we have. That you would help us see you more clearly. That we would be willing to come close to you. And that we would also, in the same time as we come close to you, we would realize that our voice matters in the lives of people who don't know you, our friends, our neighbors, family members. So, Father, in all that you have done and all that you have said, the way we have seen you show up in our lives, we ask God one more time that you would show up here. We ask that your presence would be thick in this place.
Thank you for speaking to us. Thank you for continuing to pursue us. Now may you instill us with a courage to use our voice that we might speak into the lives of others.